Dr. Hawkins, we've talked a lot about introducing the whole concept of truth versus falsehood in the first session. Could you explain how humankind has been suffering through their own falsity, how they've misidentified the truth, and examples of how that has kind of hurt us in the past?
Well, I use the example of malignant messianic narcissism, where the great leader... Why do people seek the great leader? Because they feel deficient within themselves, because they don't own their own power, so they worship it as being out there. And then the great leader is very narcissistic and very persuasive, especially with rhetoric. They now gain a foothold with the populace. They don't have any intrinsic power. The power is a projection from the populace, but they're given great power. You can recognize them because they always have their statues all over the country and their pictures all over the country and billboards all over the country. And if you fly into a country and you see that, that right away tells you you're dealing with narcissistic megalomania. Because why would a person need to do that except for self-aggrandizement? The human mind is incapable of telling truth from falsehood because it's motivated by the egoistic drives. So it tends to believe that which fulfills its egoistic drive. So self-delusion then is subserving some egoistic purpose. The question then is, why do people get addicted to the ego? See, and this is very interesting, because if you track the evolution of the ego from the earliest time, we saw that it was necessary for survival. The ego was the animal's tool for survival. What does the human get out of it? What the human gets out of it is satisfaction. Why do people nurture a hate for a lifetime and resentments? Why do they, you know, so-called injustice collectors? Why, if negativity is unpleasant, do they cling to it? It's because the ego has learned how to juice it. It loves suffering. It loves being the martyr. It loves, you know, being right and other people being wrong. It loves knowing truth greater than the greatest minds that have ever lived. You know, it prides itself on this. And therefore, it gets juice. All right, the ego's only juice comes from the animal energy. The spiritual, then, becomes the enemy of the ego. So the ego, then, has learned how to juice negativity for the payoff. And this is the chronic professional victim. You know, the martyr, the victim. And this is what perpetuates perpetrator-victim relativism. Through relativism, you can picture anything. Anybody's the victim of out-there-ness. So everybody gets to be victim. The competition in this world is for being victim. Oh, the competition of victimhood is ferocious, you know. So, you know, spiritually evolved, integrous groups, you know, one of the catchphrases is, and many of you know, people listening to this will recognize it, there is no such thing as a justified resentment. In other words, the question is, do you get more out of the resentment, or do you, you know, gain from letting it go? So you don't let it go until you're willing to let go the gratification, the juice, the pleasure. So the addiction to the ego is addiction to the animal energy juice pleasure it gets out of these positions. People become jubilant with hate. Do you realize that? They're jubilant. They jump up and down to the TV cameras and parade around and hang effigies, you know what I mean? They love it. They love injustice and being the martyr and drama. You get to be somebody. The egoistic gain is just tremendous. You know? Another level. The spirit always knows when you're lying, and therefore when it's juicing negativity, falsity for the egoistic gain. All right, so it's only when you introduce some kind of spiritual energy that you have something with which to counter it. And the reason it's able to is because the ego's alignment is with force, emotional force, or some kind of force, whereas the spiritual energy is aligned with power. Left to its own devices, the ego could never undo itself, nor would it want to. Why would it want to undo its dominion? It sees itself as God, and why would it want to undo its sovereignty? It's only the power of spiritual truth, then. So that's the big turnaround. When a person, you know, hits bottom, decided there must be a better way, and calls upon God. Well, invocation in itself is enormously powerful when it's legitimate and genuine, not as a way to control God. A lot of prayer is just trying to control God to grant favors and give God advice. You know, my dear Aunt Nellie needs help with her gallbladder surgery. God doesn't need your information about that. It's nice that you think of her, but he really doesn't need advice. But so if you're God, you get, you know, you're pounded with advice, information, entreaties, persuasions, people rattling the gates of heaven, making promises, trying to seduce God. You know, it's very interesting. Trying to flatter God. Of Course in Miracles says that you ask God for a miracle. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? What it means is you're willing to surrender linear content for a greater context, the overall field. Huh? When presented within a greater context, greater overall field, the miraculous occurs because that's a potentiality manifesting as an actuality. So when it's recontextualized, then it looks completely different. You're responsible for the effort and not the result, which again is a quote from a well-known spiritual organization. Mm. And then in the end, you surrender to the highest good, you know, the surrender to the highest good. Like your sacrifice might be someone else's benefit and you've undone some negative karma, you know, for who knows. Mm.